interpreted during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
Today we'll address the budget battle in Washington with former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Weiner and what a government shutdown would have meant for DOD workers with AFGE Local 1945 President Everett Kelly. But first, Congressman Jerry Connolly will discuss a bill to ensure retroactive pay for furloughed federal employees. Congressman Connolly, welcome back to Inside Government.
Thank you. Great to be back with you, Jason.
You co-sponsored a bill that would ensure retroactive pay for furloughed federal employees in the event of a government shutdown. Tell us more about that bill.
It's a fairly straightforward bill, consistent with past practice in Congress, that when, no fault of their own, federal employees are furloughed or lose their compensation for some period of time, that they are retroactively reimbursed so that they're kept whole.
And who sponsored the bill and who was with you on this?
This is a bill being sponsored by both Congressman Jim Moran and Congressman Wolf of Virginia. The three of us on a bipartisan basis, and there may be others as well in the National Capital Region.
Congressman, has the Obama administration been supportive of this bill?
I really assume that they would be. As I said, this is consistent with past practice. For example, in the shutdown of the federal government back in 1995, even a Republican Congress, working with a Democratic president, President Clinton, agreed that reimbursement was justified for the 21 days of the shutdown, and indeed reimbursement occurred.
Congressman, in a day and age when federal employees are often made the scapegoats for the nation's problems or budget issues, this bill, while you said is pretty straightforward, it's almost a unique tribute to federal employees and the services they provide. Talk about that for a minute.
I'm tired, and I'm sure public employees are tired, of the federal employee being made sort of the pincushion of those who want to make some short-term political gain at their expense. And I think that's wrong. I think we need to be respectful of the dignity and commitment that public service represents, and I think we ought to be fostering that, not playing games, political games, at the public employee's expense. And so I would hope that this piece of legislation also represents a marker for the future that we are going to honor our public employees and we're going to honor our commitment to them just as they every day honor their commitment to us, the public.
Some of your colleagues in the House don't have a strong sense of appreciation for the federal employees and the work that they do. What makes you feel so passionate about this issue?
You know, I was 10 years old when John Kennedy was inaugurated as President of the United States, and I think all of us remember his stirring words at that inaugural. And that really motivated me to see public service as a noble calling, as something that, was service to your country and to the community. And I've always tried to live my public life in that spirit. And it really bothers me. On both sides of the aisle, particularly, frankly, on the Republican side of the aisle, that so many elected officials want to, frankly, denigrate public service for some short-term pandering and political gain. And I just think that's wrong, and the ultimate losers aren't even the federal employees we're talking about. It's the public we all serve.
What do the federal employees in your district say to you when you talk to them about these issues, about trimming their pay, about furloughs, about government shutdowns?
I think, first of all, obviously there was, with the imminent threat of a shutdown, there was great anxiety. But I think, secondly, federal employees and frankly, federal contractors for that matter, are tired of being, treated as a punching bag. I think there's a growing anger about the fact that people are making political hay at their expense.
Congressman Jerry Connolly from Virginia. As always, Congressman, thank you for your time today. You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll hear from AFGE Local 1945 President Everett Kelly about what a government shutdown would have meant for Department of Defense workers. And later, we'll hear from former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Weiner on the budget battles in Washington.
Looking for a new computer, TV, or home appliance? Purchasing Power has a hassle-free way for you to buy these items through Easy Payroll Deduction. You can get the new Dell Inspiron 15-inch laptop for just $30 bi-weekly. Get started today. Log on to ShopPurchasingPower.com. That's ShopPurchasingPower.com. AFGE members are eligible for a 10% members-only discount for a limited time. Sales tax may apply.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Everett Kelly, AFGE Local 1945 President. Everett, welcome back to the program.
Hey, good to be back, Jason.
Now, Everett, federal employees were on edge last week as it took an 11th-hour budget deal to avert a government shutdown. What were the Defense Department's preparations going into the weekend?
Well, you know, Jason, to be honest with you, it's hard to say what the Defense Department preparation was because, you know, at the last minute, I think people were still uncertain about, you know, what would happen. There was some guidance issued that was very vague. That still left the Defense Department, in my opinion, you know, with questions unanswered. So I don't think that it was really prepared for a shutdown.
Did your workers, your employees there, have any indication whether they would be essential or non-essential?
They had nothing official to say that they would be essential or non-essential. We requested information, but we really didn't get anything. We got a generic answer from some of our senior management is saying, well, you know, our people, based on the last shutdown, will be essential. But we did not get anything official from DOD or from anyone that said that those employees were essential.
And what kind of response did you get from the workers? What did it do to their morale that week?
Well, it certainly brought morale down. We got a lot of questions and a lot of concern. Matter of fact, I think the management was because we did put out, you know, some information from the union to alert the employees that this was a very real threat. And I think the management took offense to the letter that we put out because, in their opinion, we brought morale down. But we was trying to educate our employees to let them know that this was a real threat and they need to prepare for it. And in the event that we need them to take some type of action, for them to be ready.
And so your workers were leaving on Friday expecting to go back into work either Sunday night or Monday morning, but not really sure?
Well, Jason, fact of the matter is we work a 5-4-9 work schedule. Friday was an off Friday for my employees. So had they been shut down, you know, the management official wouldn't have been able to get them the information because Thursday when they left, there was still no decision. So they would have had to came in on Monday, had to have come in on Monday, and been issued letters at that time. That's when they really would have gotten an official notice.
If a shutdown had occurred and your employees were deemed essential and required to work, would they have been paid during that time?
Well, you know, there's a possibility of them receiving pay after the shutdown period was over. Because, I mean, certainly if there was a shutdown period, who would issue the checks? Who would write the checks? I mean, so, you know, our employees would have been negatively impacted in the fact that they wouldn't have received the check during that time.
And how do you deal with this situation going forward? You'd mentioned that the information you got wasn't very consistent. You didn't know anything official. How would you deal with this again if the situation occurred?
Well, if the situation occurred, again, I would deal with it the same way. Until I had something official in my hand, you know, I would alert the employees that, hey, this is a real threat. You need to prepare for the possibility of being shut down.
You're also dealing with a number of other situations at Local 1945, one of which is the status of some temporary employees who you are trying to get converted to permanent status. Tell us about that.
Yes, you know, this is an issue that I've been dealing with for some time now. We had, you know, probably over 1,100 term employees, but now we have about 700 that for about 2 years have been working very diligently trying to come up with ways to get those employees converted to permanent positions. Because some of these employees have actually been employed by the government now for 6 and 7 years. The term appointment has actually run out, but they're on what is called now a Schedule A appointment. So we're working diligently with the management here and, you know, to try to see what can be done to get those employees to permanent status.
Explain for the audience what a Schedule A appointment is.
Well, a Schedule A is an appointment that has been authorized by Congress that will allow an extension of employment at least while the war is going on. But now, after the war is over, the Schedule A appointment could be terminated immediately. So these employees are still on pins and needles, with a lot of uncertainty because certainly the war could end tomorrow. And so then there would be no authorization at this point to extend those employees. So that's why they are so uneasy about their employment, because at any time now, you know, they could be terminated because the scheduled appointment is not there any longer.
So what you're saying then is the only thing that's keeping these term employees still working at your DOD installation is the war that's going on, and if that war should end, then their status is up in the air, or likely they would just be terminated?
That's correct.
And so as you're going through this process, have you found management to be receptive to your requests to have them converted?
Well, you know, I'll have to say that management understand the dilemma, and they are very sensitive to the problem here. And they have also been working on ways because they know we have good employees. They know that, you know, if you give them a task, it'll be taken care of. So they have been very sensitive to the situation and have been trying to come up with ways, you know, to convert these employees. It's just a matter of law and the procedure that has to be followed. You know, you have to compete those jobs and those types of things, which, you know, bring up other issues.
Tell us a little bit about the 700 employees here that are affected by this term employment. What do they do?
Well, you know, of course, you know, we build weapons, tanks, small arms. So they are actually making sure that the warfighter has what he or she needs on the battlefield. whether it be a Striker or an M1 tank or an M16 or a 45.
You bring up a really good scenario here, and that is a lot of times we hear federal employees being compared to those in the private sector, and insinuations that federal employees are paid significantly more than those in the private sector. However, it's very difficult, and your situation is a good example of this. It's very difficult to compare some of those jobs. I don't believe there are many jobs in the federal sector where people are building a Striker or a tank or an M1. Is that correct?
That is correct. There is no comparison to the private sector, the type of work that we do. It's just no comparison. So I don't know how anyone would come up with that analysis because, you know, you can't show that.
How does that make you feel? How does that make your workers feel whenever someone says that you're paid too much or almost diminishes the value of the work that you do?
Well, you know, certainly, you know, our workers are very patriotic. They are very emotional about that situation because, you know, until you walked a mile in their shoes, you know, you don't know what they do. These employees come to work every day. And they work hard, you know, to make sure that the warfighter has what he or she needs on the battlefield. And to say that they are overpaid, you know, it really takes the sting out of them. You know, it takes the sting out of me because I certainly know, you know, that no employee on this installation is overpaid. And to look at the television, though, and see some of the numbers that is thrown out there, you know, it's an inflation of the truth. And, you know, some kind of way we have to let the American public know the real truth, that federal employees are not overpaid. Matter of fact, they're underpaid. When you compare similar type salaries, you'll see that we are vastly underpaid.
And what are you doing down in Alabama to ensure that the perception of federal workers, particularly your members, is accurate?
Well, I am running radio ads, having rallies. Matter of fact, we had a big rally not long ago where we educated the community, you know, on these facts and these issues that we're facing as federal employees.
And I want to go back to the term employee situation for just a minute. How is that impacting them? How does this situation make those employees feel, knowing that they could be let go almost at any time?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, it adds to the stress that they feel every day, just already knowing that they could be let go at any time. But when you start talking about, you know, things that they've been hearing on the news and on the television the past few weeks, you know, when you talk about a possibility of shutdown, you talk about the fact that federal employees are overpaid, you know that only adds to the stress level that they are already facing.
And what's next for you at Local 1945 outside of these issues? What are you planning on next?
Well, you know, one thing that I am really planning on doing is trying to continue to educate the community about the issues that we're facing every day as federal employees, the threat of our benefits, retirement system, pay system, leave system, all of the things that, you know, we have worked so hard for, you know, is under attack. And what I want to do is for some way, somehow, let the American public know that there's a lot of inflated truths out there, and if they really want to know the real truth of what federal employees do, talk to another federal employee, you know, because they can tell, you know, anyone what they do every day, how they get it done, and how the warfighter is benefited, how, you know, American veterans are benefited by what we do, how Social Security recipients are benefited by what we do. You know, and so this is my message, and this is going to continue to be my message.
Everett Kelly, president of AFGE Local 1945. Everett, as always, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll be joined by former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Wiener on the budget battle in Washington.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits Line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Some polls say Americans don't trust government. But listen to our members, the real people who work hard for you every day.
I'm Mike Schnobrick, a correctional officer at the Supermax in Florence, Colorado. Trust me, the terrorists are locked down tight.
My name is Janet Winghart, a Social Security claims rep in Fort Lauderdale. Senior citizens can trust me to get them the right check at the right time.
I'm Michelle Reed, a registered nurse at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Trust me, I care for our veterans like family.
My name is Everett Kelly. I work for the Anniston Army Depot, Anniston, Alabama. Trust me, our tanks are tough.
I'm John Gage, president of AFGE. You can trust us. We work for you. Brought to you by AFGE and online at afge.org.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Bob Wiener, former senior White House spokesman in the Clinton administration and former chief of staff for the House Aging Committee. Bob, welcome back to the program.
It's a pleasure, Jason, and what you do to get the word out, the facts out to your membership and to all of our listeners is really remarkable. Thanks for everything you do.
Always great to have you. Bob, let's talk numbers and some budget issues here. Republicans and Democrats struck a bipartisan deal late last week to avoid a government shutdown and keep the government running through the end of fiscal year 2011. Give me some of the key points of the deal.
Well, the key point is that the Republicans wanted to cut $68 billion as the trigger for $100 billion for the year. They started with $100 billion, and the president did whittle them down to $39 billion. But we had to give up a lot of the store to do it. We had to give up, for example, $200 million in NIH research, which is enormous. We've had a one-third increase because of research, direct correlation, lifetime expectancy because of the research over the last two decades. And now we're cutting it back because the Republicans don't want to cut the wars and they don't want to cut taxes for the rich. So we had that. And we did not give up. The key is what we didn't give up. We didn't give up to voucherize Medicare, to privatize Social Security. We didn't give up all the Pell grants, we didn't give up a huge proportion of food stamps. I could not believe, Jason, when a Republican strategist came on the line. I'm a token progressive on Fox TV, and I was on against Jack Burkhardt, a Republican strategist, and he said, "Well, the poor and the seniors, they are getting the benefits, so they should be the ones to give them up." What, are you kidding me? That is just such a horrible philosophy, and that's exactly where the Republicans are coming from. Give more tax breaks to the rich. What Paul Ryan wants to do is to drop the tax rate, the top rate now, from 35 to 25. And as you know, we are headed toward the outpouring from President Obama's speech today, where he's going to be talking about increasing the tax the taxes for the wealthy, restoring the pre-Bush rates to the Clinton rates, where we had 22 million jobs that we created by a successful and balanced and surplus budget. So it's a totally night and day difference in philosophy, but I am concerned that we had to give up an awful lot, and I guess President Obama felt he had to thread the needle.
Bob, you mentioned some cuts to NIH. There were also cuts to labor, to commerce,
right,
to transportation.
Correct.
And HUD, agriculture,
right,
financial services.
Right.
What is your reaction to all of that?
It is such a difficult situation for President Obama. We all know he's the game that we have, and we have to play it, and we have to support it. And he's trying to work. You know, it's sort of my philosophy too, Jason, to move as far left as you can and still win. But I just wonder if his calculations are right. I wonder if Boehner would have been willing to give up a little more. The president started with he had proposed 30. $3 billion in cuts, and we landed at $38.5 billion in cuts. There were more than was necessary. Some of the cuts that the president proposed were also mandatory spending that hasn't been spent and therefore isn't really going to hurt us a lot. So the cuts that I'm told really count are about $14.5 billion out of that $38.5 billion. And that's a lot when you've got my read, Jason, is you've got the two wars, you've got $1 trillion a year out of that, and you've got another $1 trillion a year out of the tax breaks for the wealthy, and that's really the guts of where we are. If you talk about over the next decade, we've got $4 trillion in tax breaks for the wealthy. We gave tax breaks, and we gave up another $4 trillion over the last Bush tax cut era. Then you've got $8 trillion in that, and you've got some people say $3 trillion in the cost of the two wars, and what did we really get out of the Iraq war? So it's missing the elephants in the room if we don't go after the two wars and the tax breaks, and at least the tax breaks for the wealthy. So President Obama's position of reducing the tax breaks for the wealthy is a stark contrast with Republican Chair Paul Ryan's desire to down the tax breaks for the wealthy from 35 to 25. It's give tax breaks more for the wealthy. The cuts that are there are going to be painful. They're going to be just the wrong way to go. I think that the votes are very difficult for the president, not only in the shutdown avoidance resolution from this week, but for the future budget resolutions. It's going to be a needle all the way through it. And it's just like the health bill when you come right down to it. Speaker Pelosi had to thread the needle by one or two votes one time and by five votes the other. Every which coalition, from Blue Dogs to abortion to the extreme, which I would love to have done, a real strong health care bill. And she threaded the needle and got it through by the skin of our teeth. And then we pushed all of us together, you remember, for reconciliation instead of the cloture votes of 60. We got it to where the Senate actually adopted a 50-vote process in the Senate, and we got the health bill through that way. And Republicans haven't let us off with that yet. People don't understand that we have a bill that that at least oversees the insurance companies and provides 30 million more recipients and lifetime benefits and no pre-existing conditions and hands on the insurance companies and coalitions where you can buy health care cheaper, although they're whittling away at that now too. So it's going to be the same thing now. We have to thread the needle, and that's what President Obama is doing.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government. We're joined by Bob Wiener, former senior White House spokesman in the Clinton administration and former chief of staff for the House Aging Committee. Bob, what do these cuts mean for working families who depend on public services every day?
Well, when you have $3.5 billion cut from HUD, you have $5.5 billion that are cut from crime victims, assets forfeiture, fisheries, employee health benefits, working capital. You have $400 million cut from Treasury forfeiture, fraud prevention and detection. And, you know, it means that you're not going to have a safe drinking water. You're not going to have a safe air. You're not going to have mine leasing safety. Gee, we've had mine deaths. You know, it means you're not going to have a safe mines. It just means that less for healthcare cooperatives. What do we have here? $2.5 billion cut from the healthcare cooperatives. $493 million cut from Pell Grants. It means that because of the Republicans, we're going to have less of an America for working Americans, and it means we're going to have less of a safe America from the corporations, and we're going to have more of a deregulation giveaway that caused the financial crisis in the first place. And it means that we're going to have an America that in 2012, hopefully people will see what the Republicans are blackmailing Democrats into and can make some changes in a real philosophical way. This could be an election that turns it back around and where we recapture the House, where we protect the Senate, and where President Obama wins in a landslide. So I have, you know, the way that I want to look at this politically, and that isn't the question you asked. You asked about the real impact. But politically, I think that we may have the Republicans backed into such a corner for extremism to show that what they are doing is an outrage to America and grossly unfair and giving more and more and more to the rich in their tax breaks, that we can retake the whole thing. You know, in the last election, and let's do this one political thing, we can go back to this. But the Republicans did not win the Senate because of the extremism of Sherrod Angle in Nevada and Witch Woman in Delaware and Buck in Colorado. Those three votes were critical in our small margin in the Senate that we have. So if the Republicans are playing into the extremism and then the abortion thing that they're doing, it's everything has to be about abortion and choice and Planned Parenthood until the facts came out that no federal dollars go to abortion services by Planned Parenthood, none. And all the senators, Stabenow and Mikulski and Klobuchar and all had the news conference that showed that that no federal funding went to, and only 3% of Planned Parenthood's entire, including their private funding, goes to abortion. That Kyle outright lied when he said that over 90% did. And when that came out, that actually was the beginning of the end for their ability to get a shutdown going. If that was going to be the reason for the shutdown, they looked like fools, and it started turning around on that and also on the basis of the fact that there were going to be cuts to military pay. So, you know, if that's the way they want to play, and if they want to play, Jason, where they're stealing workers' rights to negotiate in Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, and across the country, that also, there have been 30-point swings, and Walker is now 15 points behind the guy that he beat for governor in Wisconsin because of his stealing workers' rights. It's not even about the money. It's about workers' rights. So if that's the way they want to play on everything, boy, are they going to be in for a rude political awakening. And it's going to be to the Democrats and the country's advantage in the 2012 election.
We're going to talk more about the political strategy and the political fallout from this in just a minute. But I want to get your reaction to one more part of the budget, and that's the defense spending.
Yeah.
Give me some analysis on that.
Well, President Obama is proposing a cut of $500 billion in defense, and Gates came out. But, you know, when you're talking about the amount of money that we spend on defense, it's so overwhelming. It's just so enormous.
We spend more than the next 10 countries combined on defense. How we got in that role, I don't know, because Russia became unpowerful because of it. Britain, Spain, every country that has had a economic downfall over the recent centuries has had it because they've put too much into their military, their defense, and their empire. And so if we are falling into that trap, which we unfortunately have, that's another one of the reasons why we could be headed for the Portugal and the Greece scenarios on our budgets. If we don't do more than token cuts in defense, if we don't really get out of Iraq and Afghanistan, I know that there's some labor issues involved in the amount of money that labor makes on defense contractors, but we have 100,000 contractors. This is unknown. I'm in the middle of doing an op-ed on 100,000 contractors in Iraq and 100,000 contractors in Afghanistan. We have more contractors than troops, and they're doing the same things. They're doing security. They do worse things. They do the prison torture because they don't have the oversight. It was the CIA contractors that did the prison torture in Abu Ghraib. The contractors are a disaster for our economy and for the philosophy of government that we need in this country in terms of having them fighting wars abroad and it's a fraud to say that we're withdrawing when we have 100,000 contractors in both places. So that's what's killing us economically. You talk about the $1 trillion that we're spending a year on our wars, and that's where it goes. And both in black budget and overt budget, it goes into those contractors. And so how can we say that we are really going to cut the budget if we don't back off on the incredible tax breaks for the rich that have depleted us and the two wars? You talk about no revenue and a deficit, that's where it goes. And John Stewart, just this week, did a very funny thing. He did Paul Ryan's thing of Ryan showed how the deficit is soaring, and he had this graph with swirling music that Ryan used, the Republican chairman of the House Budget Committee. So Stewart did the same swirling music and a graph of restore the tax revenue amounts proportions to the Clinton levels, and the deficit went right down to a flat line. It went right down to a flat line. And so, it was very funny. My wife and I were just cracking up. And I hope that makes the Sunday funnies on the talk shows. And I hope that it makes all the morning Joes and all of that. Because he really made the point that you give away the revenues and then you claim a deficit. What kind of economics is that? It's inane.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next we'll continue with former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Wiener on the budget battle in Washington.
Looking for a new computer, TV, or home appliance? Purchasing Power has a hassle-free way for you to buy these items through Easy Payroll Deduction. You can get the new Dell Inspiron 15-inch laptop for just $30 bi-weekly. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com. AFGE members are eligible for a 10% members-only discount for a limited time. Sales tax may apply.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits Line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
The wrecking ball is hitting right now. Vital federal, state, and local services that working Americans depend upon every day are being smashed. As public employees, we know firsthand the damage these crushing attacks will have on so many Americans. Education cuts from Head Start through college loans. Less nursing care for veterans. Shutting down inspections for food, air, water, and coal mines. Closing Social Security offices. Less fire, police, prison, and border protection. And less support for our troops. Public employees need to set the record straight. No one is telling the real story, and no one knows it better than public employees. Call, then visit your congressmen and senators. Tell them who you are and what you do. Just tell them the truth. It's about time somebody did. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Some polls say Americans don't trust government. But listen to our members, the real people who work hard for you every day.
I'm Mike Schnobrick, a correctional officer at the Supermax in Florence, Colorado. Trust me, the terrorists are locked down tight.
My name is Janet Winghart, a Social Security claims rep in Fort Lauderdale. Senior citizens can trust me to get them the right check at the right time.
I'm Michelle Reed, a registered nurse at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Trust me, I care for our veterans like family.
My name is Everett Kelly. I work for the Anniston Army Depot, Anniston, Alabama. Trust me, our tanks are tough.
I'm John Gage, president of AFGE. You can trust us. We work for you. Brought to you by AFGE and online at afge.org.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're joined by Bob Wiener, former Clinton White House spokesman and former chief of staff for the House Aging Committee, talking about the budget battles in Washington. Bob, how does the budget deal impact Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, those types of programs?
Well, we have a serious health care problem, which the president addressed in the health bill. And we added 10 years of solvency to Medicare, which Paul Ryan wants to claim. He wants to repeal it, but then he wants to use the numbers in his budget. It's very funny, the hypocrisy of what he's doing. He's using the president's successful reductions in Medicare, and then he says he wants to repeal the bill that extends Medicare solvency by creating more of a national health care program. But Social Security is a difficult one because there's so much media misunderstanding on it and so much lack of fact on it. It's solvent for 30 years and self-funded, and in fact, it's even better than that when you talk about the profit on the surplus that's in the trust fund that seniors paid themselves. So finally, Paul Ryan didn't even put Social Security in the budget. We have hammered and hammered, and he realized that that's a political disaster, although he's got it in all of his talk up to the budget. So we still have to watch for that. There could be, because of the fact that Social Security has become something of a lightning rod for budget, that even though it's not factual, they could do something about it just for political reasons by expanding the age and cutting some of the benefits down and COLAs and all of that. There is no need to do any of that for Social Security. The amount of money that seniors paid in and the payroll tax by employers has self-funded it. Now, they did a very dangerous thing in this last tax deal that the president did a couple of months ago, and I was at that news conference at the White House. I get to cover all the White House news conferences because of the op-eds that I do. And he actually cut the payroll tax by a third that contributes to Social Security, but he put a legal terminology in the deal that said, but the government will make up the difference. Well, so CBO is already saying that now there's a shortfall. They don't buy that mumbo jumbo. We just cut the money that goes into the federal treasury that would cover Social Security. That's the reality of what we've done, even though now on paper we still have protected Social Security. So we have to watch very carefully on that. The main thing we have to do is that the two-year payroll tax deduction is restore that tax to where it was so that we don't have this legal mumbo jumbo. And Barbara Cannelli has been very active, the former congresswoman who's chair of the National Commission to Protect Social Security and Medicare on that. We have to protect Social Homeland Security. We cannot let the Republicans touch it. And Democrats, I believe, will fight to the death to not have Social Security touched. And I also think that Democrats will fight to the death, and I think we will win the political battle, and therefore I think we will stop it from happening. The proposals that Paul Ryan has done to privatize and slice in half Medicare, all that does is give to the insurance companies the power to do what they always do, jack up rates and cause less benefits for people. And you remember we had to stop a 40% rise that in California that the private insurance companies were going to do, and only under political pressure did they drop it back down to a 10% rise, which is still pretty heavy rise. It was somewhere between 10 and 16. So we have a real problem with the Republicans that want to steal the money of seniors for Medicare, which has been the most successful health program ever, and Social Security, which has been the most successful pension program ever. The president is trying to keep Medicare funded. Has to happen. We can't let it go. We can't privatize it. We can't voucherize it. We know what happened with the stock market. You privatize things, and you lose it. Both Social Security and Medicare are active. They're on the hot seat. They're in the firing line. But we have to, and this is where the constituency of AFSCME and all of the federal agencies, and all of the our labor union friends, that we have to make sure that that Social Security and Medicare are protected. And there are caucuses in the Congress that are insistent on doing that. We have to keep it strong and keep their feet to the fire.
Bob, we know the president wants to reduce health care spending. How does the Affordable Care Act play into that?
Well, it does it by volume. We create the cooperatives, but now the Republicans, and also by adding $30 million to the mass volume that we have for Medicaid. The problem is that you can't just throw Medicaid people into the mix and expect the states to pay for it. So there's going to have to be revenue enhancement, we call it. People don't want cuts in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security and education. That's what the polls show. And they also show that they are actually willing to make sure that tax revenues absorb the need for those programs. There's a higher priority on that. There's also enormous public support for increasing the taxes on the rich to compensate for the difference, since they've had such increases in their tax breaks over the years. So the president's going to have to work very carefully. The Republicans are going to make an issue out of no tax increases, and they're going to lump the rich into it as though we're part of middle and, they are part of middle and lower income when we make those proposals. It's not the case. There should have been a division. The president accepted the lumping in the recent tax deal a couple of months ago. So Medicare and Medicaid and national health insurance now are critical in the fact that health care premiums have doubled every 10 years. Doubled every 10 years. The only way to stop that is through federal oversight, federal volume, the kind of controls, the kind of cooperatives that the president has in the health bill. But the Republicans are whittling away at that. This could be one of those oscillating things, Jason. You and I have seen it in our, unfortunately, somewhat long lifetimes, and where the Congress goes back and forth and the pendulum goes back and forth in terms of what the Congress can pass. We've just had a cycle where the president has been able to get some very good things done, but now the Republicans have just won, and the cycle is where they're able to cut. Maybe in 2012 we'll be able to get the cycle to come back where we'll actually be able to protect Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security and swing the tax proportions to the direction that we need. And hopefully the president won't have caved too much to make it impossible to do with a new Congress. The biggest fear, the huge fear that I have, is God knows what happens to us if the Republicans win the Senate and win the presidency. We are going to be in just an enormous, it'll be a Reagan-like situation where we triple the deficit and increase the tax breaks for the rich, and again magnify the defense spending and put our nation in an unsolvable debt crisis. Reagan actually kicked all this off. And everybody says, oh, great rhetoric. Well, yeah, great rhetoric. That's one thing Republicans do very well, even the current batch. It's amazing. They'll talk about jobs and then talk about tax breaks. How you can do the same in the same breath when over the last decade it hasn't worked is beyond me. So healthcare is the same thing. We fought Claude Pepper, who I was the chief of staff, and in addition to being the chief of staff of the House Aging Committee, I was chief of staff of the Health Subcommittee before that, which is part of the Aging Committee, and he fought for national health insurance back in 1976 through 1980. Harry Truman, back in the 40s and 50s, was fighting for it. We finally got a little piece of it, and the Republicans want to take it away. We have to stop that. We're not succeeding. There are little chips away that are going against it right now.
Bob, my final issue I want to address with you is the 2012 election. What do you think President Obama's strategy will be to get reelected? And on the other side, how do you see Republicans forming their strategy against him?
Republicans are going to say tax breaks, tax breaks, tax breaks, and Obama only just wants to increase spending. Meanwhile, the president, it's just nonsense because he has actually been a very centrist president, more than many of those who are in the progressive movement would like. He's going to talk about how he's cooperating. He has reached out. For example, 160 amendments that were tax breaks in the health bill, they wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for the Republicans. We didn't want that. We wanted to do national health insurance, and everybody did. But to try to get Republican votes, which absolutely failed, we put in 160 tax breaks amendments by Republicans. He will point out that he's cooperated, that he's had meetings. The Republicans will say he never cooperates. He never has meetings. They will try to paint him as an extremist. He will try to paint himself as governing for the good of the country with financial reform, with health reform, having put an edict out, no more torture, having built respect in foreign policy, having reduced, beginning the reduction of forces in Afghanistan, and having taken 100,000 troops out of Iraq. That's how he will be playing it. And then the Republicans will say he's weak on national security. We need to keep our troops involved and keep our country safe. Let's just all hope that we don't have a terrorist attack between now and the election, because that would be a real boon to the Republicans. So let's hope everything works that way. But politically, we will have the Republicans claiming Obama's an extremist socialist. Obama pointing out that he's really been a centrist. Gee whiz, how much more centrist can you be than to do a national health bill that drives through the private insurance companies? It's going to be a rock and roll election with, I'm hoping, a Palin-Bachman ticket on the Republican side.
Bob Wiener, former Clinton White House spokesman, as always, thanks for your time, Bob.
Take care. Thanks, Jason. Great fun being with you.
Thank you to our guest this week, Congressman Jerry Connolly, AFGE Local 1945 President Everett Kelly, and former Clinton White House spokesman Bob Wiener. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE